Hi, this is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we have a spooky Halloween special. We're going to be chatting about mummies in D&D, asking the question, why are they unique compared to any other undead, and how do they change over the editions, and how can you best use them? All that and more today in Wandering DMs.
Before we begin today's conversation, I'll remind everyone that, as always, at the end of the show, Dan and I will be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat with Dan and I and all of our patrons, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our private Discord server. Get your account all set up over there, and about 10 to 15 minutes after the end of the show, we will be there to chat with you all live.
I am personally really looking forward to that today. So, happy Halloween to those who celebrate later this week. And as usual, we like to talk about some kind of undead-related subject for a deep dive like we like to do. Now, Paul, I have written myself about mummies through the ages on my blog a number of years ago. I've got a link to that in the description. But I've learned a couple new things since I wrote that, frankly. And one of the things I recently learned is, like, where does, like, in popular fiction, the whole idea of, like, mummies, curse type thing in fiction come from? And I've recently learned a lot of that actually comes from some of our favorite women authors in the 1800s, kind of laying down the groundwork for fantasy and science fiction before they actually had that terminology. So some of the earliest stories about, like, mummy curse type fiction comes from Jane Loudon, and surprisingly, Louisa May Alcott wrote a story about mummies in the 1800s. And then some of us will know that fed into these universal horror movies in the 1930s with, Boris Karloff and Lon Chaney Jr. That's probably what, like, Gygax and Arneson were thinking about when they made The Mummy for D&D. So that's one of the new tidbits that's kind of interesting to me.
That's fascinating.
Huh. Mate. Right? How fascinating is that?
I didn't realize you had already done a Through the Ages on this, and I will shamedly admit that I did not go back and reread that. So that's fine. You'll just have to be the stand-in for, or rather, I'll be the stand-in for our guests, our viewers, as I ask you about what's in there.
One small problem, Paul, is that I didn't remember that I'd done that either. And so I was doing an internet search for information about mummies in D&D, and then I was like, oh crap, that guy might help. So I had to very briefly brush up and remind myself about a couple of things this weekend that I knew previously and forgot.
Well, Dan, let me, before, you know, I think both you and I are very curious to dig through all the different editions. I've got every edition of D&D, not every edition, but most of the many editions of D&D sitting open to the mummy entry here on my desk next to me. But before we get into that, I thought maybe let's just talk a little bit, like, how or when, what's your background? What is your experience in running mummies? How often do you use them? They appear frequently in your games?
Okay. I actually avoid them a little bit. And that's kind of one of the things I wanted to dig in with you today is why I find them a little bit troubling. One thing we're going to learn here is that they're one of these monster types that weirdly vary a lot between different editions. And so different players coming from different editions are going to have wildly different instincts about how mummies are supposed to interact with their characters. And I do find, I think that the main theme I'm going to say is that mummies make for among the slowest fights, like record-setting, really slow fights in every way you can think of. So one of the main things is they are, there's a big encounter with mummies at the conclusion of Tomb of Rahotep, right? That's the really super early dungeon by Alan Lucian that laid down the template for Tomb of Horrors. We played that online here on this channel a couple Halloweens back with our friends at WebDM. And I think if viewers go and look at that, look at the moment at the end encounter where the mummies come up, you might possibly see my face, maybe if you look real careful, like look really anxious about the pacing of this last fight that's potentially going to be really slow and really dragged out. And you might possibly see that I might have possibly hand-waved some of the rules around mummies right at the end to make that not be super, super slow at the end. And that's one of the main things that stick in my mind about when I've used mummies.
My memory of that, Dan, is that you and I played that module previously privately with a private group at HelgaCon, and did see exactly that, right? That the mummy encounter was a huge slog. And I think maybe, I can't remember if we talked about it ahead of time or not, but I was totally unsurprised that during our live stream, you wanted to tune that a little bit for the sake of, even if it was just for the sake of streaming or just pacing of the game. I remember that being a big item at the end of that game. I was going, wow, that mummy fight, that took forever.
I went way over time. That's probably one, I tend to do that. I tend to struggle with timing issues, but I think that might have been the record, like me going way over the time slot when we did it privately to begin with. And I'm glad that we highlighted that problem because, yeah, when we did it online, that was potentially going to be a big drag at the end of the stream.
My other point of reference, frankly, and I also don't really use them very much, although it was never an intentional like avoidance or anything for me, but there is, they do appear sort of in my own Vile Crypt of the Reawakened Sisterhood, the module that I wrote with help from Ari Salvatore, that is available on DM's Guild. It features undead gnolls, and the big bad at the end of that is basically a gnollish mummy. Now, it's a little customized, but I definitely pulled, I think, as a baseline, especially in the 5th edition rules there, the kind of base of a mummy, and then tuned it to become, you know, something more custom for that game.
Nice. And we've talked, you know, we recently had a discussion about undead in general, and we were talking about there's a lot of reasons why you'd want to customize or fine tune them for a lot of reasons. And I can see you doing the same thing with the mummy, frankly. Makes a lot of sense. A lot to be surprised.
Yeah, well, and I was trying to give everything a little bit of a gnollish twist. I wanted that to be interesting. That it was a tomb. There's a lot of undead, but it was a tomb in a gnollish region, and so all the undead had a gnoll aspect to them.
Fabulous.
Which is fun. I like to mash up the enemies like that. All right. I'm ready to dig into the different versions. That, you know, the thing that I'm going to have my eye on as we go through this, my first gut instinct when we start to look at this is I wanted to see how has mummy rot changed over the course of the edition?
Because it's I the feel big like
that's
sticker.
Such a fascinating, special thing that is unique to the mummy and always appears, interestingly, always appears in the mummy entry, right? Like when I was looking this up, I tried to look up mummy rot and some of the DMGs, not really finding them much. It always is. It's so specific to the mummy. It always appears right there in the text of the mummy description.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I think and it's cool. And, you know, I like monsters with unique custom rules and custom attack forms. That's neat.
When I did a search for like things that I've done with mummies, I realized that I actually have to have a special line in my house rules just specifically about mummy rot. It's so unique and so weird and hard to grapple with, frankly, that I have a specific rule just for mummy rot in my OED house rules. If you pull up the original D&D text as usual, super super short. The 1970 rules is just the top half of this, and as usual, it's just like three sentences. And the first thing I'll point out is that mummies are unlike any other upper level undead in classic D&D because they're the only one that doesn't have level drain. Right. Once you get past the two hit dice types, right, you're looking at wights, wraiths, specters, vampires. All of those things all have level drain, and there's mummy sitting there in that same mix, and it's the only one that does not. They've got this mummy rot stuff instead. And everything else at the higher level has level drain.
I also think they're also at an interesting inflection point of the whole intelligence level of undead. I think we talked about this once before, about sort of how the intelligence level varies from the power. They're not quite the mindless, shambling zombies and skeletons. They're not the incredibly intelligent vampires and liches. They're, I don't know, somewhere in between. They're maybe like a ghost or something, this cursed, semi-intelligent thing that has a single purpose for some reason, for some, you know, magical or supernatural reason.
Yeah, and you know, you can take that in any direction you want, because there's lots of precedent in the pulp fiction or whatever. And there are ones where they are, you know, basically cursed slaves that they have to do some particular task. There are other versions in the movies, you know, even the 1930s movies, where they're completely, totally sentient agents. Interestingly, mm-hmm. I think the very earliest fiction by Jane Loudon, like in the 1820s, was, and it was kind of a response to Frankenstein, actually, is called The Mummy, but totally, completely sentient agent that actually can camouflage themselves, look like a normal person, and become kind of an evil vizier, giving, you know, kind of sinister advice to people, was their take. So you can take that in a lot of different directions. I think the fifth edition rules say, like, mummies don't talk a lot, but they can if they want to. And some people will, like, I don't know, put one in a dungeon to as an advisor or sage, is one option. So that's totally in the D&D rule. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. What's this text you have underneath, Dan?
Okay. Paul, you're asking, so mummies, you know, in place of the level drain, they've got this mummy rot attack. And you were asking, where are the rules for the mummy rot? Now, the canonical thing that's pretty much common to all editions is that the mummy rot makes you heal 10 times slower. So your damage wounds are going to heal 10 times slower than normal. And maybe it entirely prevents clerical healing. Maybe it just makes that 10 times slower, depending on the addition. It basically prevents you from healing. And that's it in original D&D. In 1971, that was it. It doesn't look like you can entirely avoid that.
What does that even mean? Because we've had lots of discussions about how long does natural healing even take? And where is that specified?
Right.
And, you know,
right.
Magical healing, isn't that instantaneous? So what's 10 times slower than instantaneous? Isn't that still instantaneous?
Well, my take would be like 1/10 of the value of a normal spell. Now, how you take 1/10 of a d6 is, I guess I'd say that's one hit point. Yeah. Yeah. That'd be my take. There's many other takes.
Focus on the time aspect.
So in supplement 2, the Blackmore supplement by Dave Arneson, the last thing in that little supplement book is a three-page section on diseases. And they're brutal, and they are almost entirely specific to real-world diseases, which is different than anything that came afterwards, actually. So he's got smallpox, he's got the grip, he's got a bunch of real world diseases. And then the one kind of unusual thing is that he specifies advanced leprosy as we see here, the social disease afflicting all mummies. And this is what causes their wounds longer to heal. Now, the interesting little addition that might be of interest to players is that it's almost entirely fatal. So whereas initially, it was just a long-term can't heal yourself. Now, if it's not cured within 3 days, there is now a 95% chance of fatality. I guess checked every single day from then on, with modifying that by 2% per day. So basically, it's almost entirely totally fatal, which seems to be a fairly big switch up by Dave Arneson there in the Blackmore supplement. So that was where that came from.
I'm delighted by the strange title of advanced leprosy. Is there a basic leprosy as well? And are
there
they
is not. Nope. If you got leprosy, according to Dave Arneson, you only have advanced leprosy.
Yep.
That's the only option. Yep. You can get malaria. You can get tuberculosis.
I find this fascinating, Dan. I didn't realize this part about the advanced leprosy from Blackmore. And I was surprised then when I was comparing OD&D to later editions to see the fatality get introduced later. And I'm like, usually things get tempered down and become less horrible across the editions. And yet in this case, I was like, oh, it got worse.
Totally agreed. Isn't that weird? Yeah, I totally agree. It's one of the only times where it just got worse and worse through the editions. And I'm also very surprised every time I recollect that. Yeah, it's a total standout like that. Now, the other thing we see there, and this is pretty much common to all editions, is their main defense is in original D&D, it says only magic weaponry will hit mummies. Okay, that's fairly common. And I think it's the only type that says all hits and bonuses are at one half value against them. And basically what every later edition is going to interpret that is that basically they just take half damage from everything. And that's one of the main things that slows the fight down is mummies, they move among the slowest monsters in the game. They have like half move in original D&D. They move slow, they attack slow, the incoming damage is slowed, and the outgoing damage is slow because they only have one attack. It doesn't do a lot of damage. And if you think about their special attack, the mummy rot has no effect in the fight. The mummy rot doesn't have any effect until later on after the fight. So it's not like their special ability is a specific threat in the fight. It's an ongoing campaign-based thing you're not going to see until later. So there's nothing at all in the fight with a mummy that's doing anything other than just slowing everything down.
I find it strange. The half damage thing I find to be a little fussy because I wonder, why not just give them more hit points, man? Isn't that the same mathematically?
Except that if you gave them, you know, the classic thing, if you doubled their hit dice, now they would hit more. And that's not what you want from mummies. You want mummies should be slow and everything. So they effectively have more hit points, except they're not hitting any more frequently.
Yep. I still feel like maybe that's something that I want to do at the table. I think in retrospect right now, right? If I wanted to implement this rule, if I was on the ball, I might just roll their hit points and then just double it.
Yeah,
and then
smart.
Go, great, now I don't have to do, you know, division every time someone hits the thing.
Yeah, that's not bad. Now, the last thing you see in original D&D is it does say mummies are vulnerable to fire, including the ordinary kind, such as a torch. Now, again, in original D&D, it doesn't give any damage for a torch. How much damage is it? You have no idea. The DM has to make it up. In later editions, we'll see suggestions for that. And here is, I think, the crux of one of the things where different players are going to have wildly different instincts about what mummies are vulnerable to fire means. So let's say you hit them with a fireball, which obviously is probably about the best thing you can do. How much damage do you expect the fireball to do? More than like normal? General? Less than normal?
Yeah.
Same as normal?
Oh, gotcha.
What's your instinct?
More than normal, I would suppose. Right? It says that they're susceptible to fire. I would think, you know, maybe they take... Well, there you go. But they only take half damage from everything. So they do the normal amount of damage because it's not half? It's one of the only things that's not half? Yeah.
Oh, God. Mm? Huh? Question mark? Huh? See?
Yeah.
And what we'll see is depending on what edition you're looking at, the answer could be any one of those things. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more, and sometimes it's the same as normal.
But now this is being brought up in our chat, right? That they take normal damage from other spells, right? If I hit it with a lightning bolt, it's going to take normal damage, right? Not taking half damage from that one?
Probably.
Yeah. So then it really should be double damage from the fireball. If we're going to say it's susceptible to fire, I would expect the fireball to do more than the lightning bolt.
Let's look at advanced, shall we? So let's look at Gary Gygax.
Not yet. No, I don't want to move forward yet. Because I want to call out one more thing here in this text. The other thing that I find surprising and unique about the OD&D rules is almost all the rules when they're discussing mummy rot will tell you that it can only be cured by magic. But OD&D is the only one where it doesn't even really cure it. It just makes it less bad.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, cleric can reduce this to only twice as long with cure disease. It doesn't eliminate it. It just slows it down.
So if you're layering in Arneson's advanced leprosy rolls, does that mean essentially it is 100% fatal? Even magic can't stop it. You're gonna die.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot. Arneson has the line, if not cured within 3 days, then there's a 95% fatality. So maybe it maybe the cure disease removes the fatality component. But the other thing is like, but the fiction, the additional thing is the fiction is mummy curse, right? You don't talk about mummy disease in the movies or the fictions. You talk about the mummy curse. True. So why is it cured disease? That's doing some amount of alleviation, and why isn't it remove curse? Because that's in the game. Why isn't it curse?
Well, then because then we have to go down the whole road of what is a curse, right? So first of all, right, like the whole mummery rot thing is weird. It's not really a curse, right? It's a disease. It's right. So like I would anticipate really if you're going to get cursed, it should be a curse, right? And curses are of course terribly documented throughout the game. What is a curse?
It's true.
I don't know. Whatever you make up something, I guess shrug is often what you get in the rules about what a curse is.
It's a wonky design. There's no way around it. I think the mummy, I don't use mummies a lot because there's so many wonky issues with them.
You know, I kind of want to, now you can go with me on this, and this we can talk about this as we get through later editions, but I kind of want to eliminate mummy rot and replace it with the curse of the mummy, which does something like maybe give you minuses on things, minuses to hit or whatever, right? Yeah. Now it's immediately impacting combat, right? Yeah. Now it's in line with the Pulp Fiction of you've been cursed, you have the curse of the mummy. Yeah. Anyway, okay, we can move on to AD.
Okay, so to the question of what's the fire do? So AD&D has a lot of text because they're trying to alleviate the wonkiness. So it's actually one of the larger first edition textbooks. So in the bottom of the third paragraph on the fire issue, it says if you hit them on fire, magical fires will do +1 point of damage extra per die. So if I'm rolling like 66, now I'm rolling 66 plus 6. So it's a little higher. It's like
a little better.
30% more damage. Okay. A little bit better.
Yeah.
Because Torch does 1d3, not a lot. So a little bit more, not a ton. Okay. I think they'll still be hit by lightning. It doesn't say they're immune to that. Now, the disease now kind of following Arneson, that's the part that I have highlighted. It says the disease will be fatal in 1 to 6 months. Every, I guess, month, interestingly, you lose charisma now. Like most of Arneson's diseases, you lose charisma. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Okay. I guess that makes sense if we're going down the road of this is like leprosy, right? Your flesh is rotting, falling off. You look horrific as you have this. I get that. I get the loss of charisma.
Right.
I see where they're coming from.
And he added a fear effect. This is brand new. So he added a paralyzing fear effect whereby everybody nearby that sees the mummy has to make a saving throw versus magic, or they get paralyzed for the first couple rounds of the fight. That's brand new, came out of nowhere. Okay, that's movie accurate. I get that. That's not too bad. Normally, fear makes you run away in D&D, but...
Yeah, that's a little strange. I do like the rewording here of... Or the wording choice of infected creatures heal wounds at 10% of the normal rate. At least that makes me feel like, oh, okay, so I should divide by 10 the dice rolls and not worry about, like, this takes a week, maybe, for it to...
Right.
Yeah, okay. It's just less hit points. Yeah, cool.
Right. So that's what I'm getting from AD&D.
You were talking about fear, and I was caught up on the mummy rot.
Second edition is basically the same as usual. So you got a little bit more fire damage. You have the rot that's fatal in a couple months and wipes out your charisma, and you have this paralyzing fear effect. So that's where we still half damage. Still half damage if you hit it with any kind of melee weapon, certainly.
Let's talk about BX though, Dan. This is an interesting. I always find this very interesting in our ordering of things, and we even went over this last week. Was sort of like what comes first, AD&D or Basic? But the Monster Manual, I think, was one of the first, right? It was the first of the AD&D books to come out.
Correct.
So this, what we're looking at on screen right now, was certainly printed before the BX text, which came later. But you can definitely see from the BX text, I think that like it makes a lot more sense that the BX text is coming from OD&D and not from AD&D, right? Because we've lost the fatality, right?
Now, here's a little interesting wrinkle about how this got developed, because originally, I mean, you and I both played quite a bit of BX, but before BX, there was the Holmes basic set, like the same year that the Monster Manual came out. And one of the interesting things we know about that now is that Eric Holmes, that was making the first ever basic set, was working directly from OD&D, basically just he thought he was doing an editing job. Basic pretty much wrote the same stuff for Mummy and everything else as OD&D. And then we know that Gygax himself did an editing pass and he changed some stuff. And so among the things that Gygax specifically added to the Mummy is that he added the fear, right? The paralyzing fear wasn't in original D&D, but by this point it was in Gygax's head as one of the things that mummies do. So Gygax actually went, injected the fear into the basic rules. You still see it here in BX, right? It's the second sentence. You see a mummy, save versus paralysis, so you're paralyzed by fear. One of the things that Gygax overlooked when he did this editing pass is the part that I highlighted, is that it was Holmes that originally wrote the line to summarize some stuff. It says, mummies can only be damaged by spells, fire, or magic weapons, all of which only do half damage. So in basic, if you hit a mummy with a fireball, you don't do more damage. You do less. You only do half.
You do less. Yep.
Ha-ha.
And there's no mention here about being susceptible to fire in any way, right? There's no language.
It says mummies can only be damaged by spells, fire, or magic weapons. Right.
So I guess swinging a torch will still do something. But not much, because it's going to get halved.
Not much. Yeah. Right? Huh?
Oh, no.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? And hey, that it's canon, because Gary Gygax himself read this. It hit his eyeballs, and he didn't change it. So in some sense, he signed off on this being the rule for basic. I think they were being developed the same year, I think. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
You know, and the funny thing is, I totally glossed over the introduction of fear in this description, which, of course, you're right, comes from AD&D. Uh-huh. So it's
right.
Yeah, it is a weird melange here of OD&D, AD&D, and unique, nothing to do with any other system rules. The mummy, great.
You've got the rotting disease straight out of the 74 OD&D. It slows down your healing by times 10. Now here it says it entirely prevents magical healing, which I think is a little different than other systems, but you're right. The fatality part doesn't appear. No charisma damage, no fatality possibility, just slow healing. That's it.
I'm cross-referencing my books here, Dan, because I'm also noticing a slight wiggling of the hit dice.
Yeah.
When you go from original D&D, they're 5+1 in OD&D. They're 5 plus 1 in BX. They're 6 in AD&D.
Gary with AD&D increased all the undead by one hit die above ghouls.
Okay.
So the whites, wraiths, mummies, specters, vampires, they all gained one hit die for some reason. I'm not entirely sure.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there's a couple different options, and if you look at later editions, there's going to be some kind of weird mix about that. We could look at third, right? Second edition is basically the same as first. We could look at third. So you got the fear paralysis is still there. One thing is that when you die from mummy rot, you immediately turn to dust. It's like that's a little cartoonish, and I don't personally need that. You still have the mummy rot disease. It slows your healing. But now, because it ties into the third edition disease rules, it's fatal much faster, which is so weird for third edition, because like you're saying, I think of so many things in third edition being buffered from like instant death effects now you're going to die much faster because the disease does 1d6 constitution damage per day. And you're probably anybody is going to be dead in like 3 days flat. So in yep. first edition, it was like you've got 1 to 6 months. And now you probably have, you know, just a couple days and you're dead, which is like really weird for third edition. And then the other big, big change is now right at the bottom where I have it highlighted is now you hit him with fire and now it does double damage. It doesn't do half damage like in basic. Now it does double damage. And that's, you clearly want fire now.
Do you think that the turn to dust on death bit, do you think that's an attempt to make it clear that you can't be resurrected because there's no body? Is that trying to limit yes. which kind of return to life magic is available?
I mean, maybe Advanced little... said you can't raise them. Advanced already said you can't raise them if yep. they die from mummy rot. Yep. Good enough. It, I don't know why they had to do this.
And it's certainly like a little more wiggly because I don't remember my third edition's resurrection spells very well, but I'm pretty sure there are multiple variations of them, some of which mm-hmm. require the body and some probably which don't.
That's a good point. I guess raise needs the body and resurrection needs part. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need that.
Oh, what do you know? What do you know, Dan? The third edition rules are a little fiddly. Yeah, what do you know about that? Okay.
They're a little fiddly. In 3.5, they changed what you need. So third edition 3.0, you still need cure disease. 3.5 changed that to cure curse, remove curse for the first time.
Remove curse. Fascinating.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, 3.5, I guess. We're trying to make that change.
But is it still called a disease? Is mummy rot still classified as a disease in 3.5, or do they try to like change it to be it's no longer a disease at all?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know. We'll look that up later.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Good point.
It's a curse. It's a cursey disease.
We talked about the how they're vulnerable to fire, right? Their physical attacks deal half damage, but I assume now we're back to like normal spells is normal damage. I'm guessing.
I would assume so. It doesn't specifically
and say lightning bolt is normal stuff. Okay.
I think so. Yeah, that would be my interpretation here.
Yeah, like, Dan, sometimes when we end up here, I always feel like back in like the late 80s, early 90s, I can't remember when this came out, there was a Forgotten Realms comic book. I don't know why. I was not a big comic book collector in my youth, but for some reason that one, I was like, yes to that one. And so I have a big collection of them. And it spans the switch from first edition to second edition. And okay. and so of course they did what any good, you know, IP licensed content from D&D would do, which is they actually discuss it in the fiction. It actually is a thing that happens, right? The gods come to the Urground, stuff changes. One of the main characters is a wizard, and there's just one panel that will be forever burned into my memory of the wizard sitting there, like muttering to himself and going like, magic missile does less damage. Like, oh god.
I'll remind our viewers, we did a whole episode about this kind of stuff called Diegetic Disasters. You can find Diegetic Disasters on the Wandering Gems channel, where we discuss this whole kind of thing. They don't do that a lot anymore. I think nowadays, I think the fiction just doesn't do that. But once upon a time, they would wrap that into your fiction. As for a reason,
I'm going to reference. I'm going to cross reference yet another episode of Wandering DMs and say that qualifies the Forgotten Realms comic book as lit RPG.
A little bit. Now, did you know there's a new D&D comic out that just came out right now? There's a new Dungeons and Dragons.
I wasn't aware of that. Yeah.
By the writer Greg Pak, who's like famous for Planet Hulk and things like that. And so I haven't gotten my hands on it yet, but I'm kind of looking forward to that myself right now.
Yeah,
he's a great writer.
That out.
Yeah. Excellent. We'll see if the new D&D is lit RPG or not.
There you go. Speaking of the new D&D, shall we zoom forward to 5th edition? Shall we discuss
5th edition?
Player's handbook now.
Oh, you have it in paper. Wow, good for you.
I do. I do.
Wow. Great art, you know. Great art. And they don't actually, I kind of like the art on this page, actually. So if we parse the fit, and this is the 2014 text, they didn't change it much in 2024, but they still basically take half incoming damage from normal attacks. Just like third edition, fire is doubled. If I'm reading the stat block properly, fire gets doubled. They still have, I'm boggled, but they still have the mummy rot disease, and it's still fatal in just a couple days. It still winds down your constitution pretty quickly. In just a couple days, you're going to be dead. And I can't think of too many other effects in modern D&D like that, but it's still potentially fatal. You still turn to dust when you die from it. Okay. You need remove curse like they set up in 3.5. The one notable change I see here is that the fear effect, because previously it said anybody that sees a mummy has to make the save against paralyzing fear. Now the mummy has to target it at one creature. So now it's not everybody getting affected. The mummy has to lock eyes with one person, can only affect one person. So that's a little safety bumper compared to, I think early on, gaze attacks would hit basically anybody looking at a thing. And now it's just possibly one person.
I'll also point out where previous editions were draining charisma and then constitution. Now we're draining max hit.
Correct. Yes, they do. Right. They do that by, right. Good point. They do it by draining max hit points. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good catch on that. Basically 10 points every day.
And we get a lot of text here about the difference between a mummy and a mummy lord. And then, of course, you get the Mummy Lord's Lair as a lair entry in good old 5th edition parlance.
Right.
Which is kind of neat. I don't know. I like the implicit, you know, set piece-ification of it. I don't know. I'm not unhappy.
I think they set up this, like, extra level of mummy. I think they had that as early as 2nd edition. They might have not used the same terminology, actually, but I think they've had that kind of thing in 2nd and 3rd edition, if I recall correctly. Certainly they didn't have like these lair effects. That's a 5th edition novelty.
Yeah, there is kind of language in here that talks about the mummy's curse being that the mummy itself is cursed in the same way, say, a vampire is cursed, that this is a cursed existence rather than the mummy gives a curse to other folks, people who, right? Because I think maybe I'm mixing up my references here, but I thought the idea of the mummy curse was that you are cursed by the mummy for, like, you know, breaking into their lair, essentially, right? It's a sort of like an anti 1920s explorer, kind of anti-colonialism thing there of, oh, nice. You defiled my resting place. You're cursed.
Nice. And that's my instinct too, right? That's totally my instinct. I could also imagine it being like a place, like a location-based trap instead of something that the mummy physically hits you with. And there's an interpretation that, you know, like a lot of what the pulp fiction in the 30s was doing is there was kind of this subtext of scientifically reinterpreting mythological type fantasy of, like, here's an explanation for what's happening. And I can imagine the designers tuning into that thread and saying, oh, you think it's a curse, but it's really some kind of disease on the rotting corpse that you're getting touched with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is possibly a reinterpretation of that, maybe. But if it was a curse, then yeah, I would expect it to be like on some kind of seal on the barrier you're breaking into instead of the actual mummy.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of the actual mummy. Right.
Exactly. Right.
Yep. That's what I would think. Then you mentioned, how unusual the whole mummy rot thing is. And the one thing in the game that it always reminds me of that I equally have kind of like anxiety about introducing into my games and so tend to shy away from, frankly, is lycanthropy. Right. It's sort of the other, like, you know, diseasey thing, right? I dealt with it in a campaign once where I had an elf actually fail the check, and that's extra complicated because it's death, not you become a werewolf for you know, non-humans in old school D&D. And both of them ultimately just become this like awkward timer that you like. So now I just have to remember session to session to remind the player, oh, you're looking a little rattier. You're feeling less well. Probably ought to do something about that, right? And it's I don't know. I've never really had a good time playing with that. Like it felt more like logistical and annoying. Rather than being just this fun element of like, oh no, I've been cursed or I've been afflicted, right? No, it's more of like, oh, I have this stupid thing on me. I got to go deal with it. I have this chore.
I totally feel that, right? And I've been in the same place. And the rules, right, the classic rules don't give you very much, kind of throw you in the, you know, throw you out of the boat when these kinds of things happen. I think that in my late era of gaming, I think what I find myself orbiting around for those kinds of things, and I was playing Star Frontiers yesterday with our group, and we're kind of in a situation where they were trying to get allies. It wasn't going very well. And so I think with those kinds of long-term things, I find myself orbiting like there should be a wizard or a cleric or however you want to set up. There should be someone in the campaign that you can access that can resolve that, but they're sketchy and they always demand some kind of thing you're not thrilled about giving them. And so you can turn that in, you know, like the easiest thing is like, give me a magic item or something like that, but you can turn it into additional adventures. So have the person, sure, I can cure the curse or lycanthropy or whatever, but I'm going to need you to go get X thing in this place you kind of didn't want to go to. And now that's an engine that's driving additional adventures. It's driving additional action instead. And there's going to be this kind of little dagger twist where the players are like, oh, we're contributing to this, whatever horrible thing this person is working for us. That's a little bit more interesting than just mechanical degradation, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that coherent?
I get that. And I agree with where you're coming from in spirit. In practice, when it's the occasions it's actually come up for me, it's usually been when the party was very engaged in other things. And so they were like, oh, you know, we don't have time for this side quest, right? We don't have time for this nonsense. We got to go do the thing, right? We're already on a different time constraint. I can't deal with this time constraint as well.
Right. Right. I'll just say, because it's on my mind, it was kind of an intense session yesterday, is they were trying to get little spoiler, in the Star Frontiers Volturnus encounters, late you find out that there's this entire society of mechanical robots that have evolved past normal robots, and they're entirely committed to making the world pacifist, peaceful, and safe for logical life forms by exterminating all organic life that they know about on the planet. And
kill all
the
humans,
players and everything else, everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And so the players are in a point where they need their assistance. And my players yesterday it was going real sideways, real fast. They were not making sense at all. Right. And so I actually came out of the bag myself, and I'm just like, I can see this is one of these sessions. I don't want it to go all corkscrewed and get frustrating. Is I just came out of the bag and I said, they attempted a persuasion roll. It failed with their argument. And I said, I think you're going to have to give them some more information. Perhaps you could persuade them if you turned over information about your current safe headquarters base that they clearly are interested in invading at some far point in the future. Or you could turn over plans and information for interstellar spaceships that they don't currently know about that would be interesting news to them. And so now we've got a kind of interesting, not too long conversation about the players. Like, if we give them information on how that other worlds exist and they can get off this world, aren't we going to have to deal with a much wider problem later on when they want to exterminate all organic life in the universe? And so that's an interesting problem. So maybe not a side quest, right? Maybe it could just be like information that you don't want to turn over. And that didn't take too long.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. And I think generally the thing I'm pushing against is essentially the drop dead timer, right? That you have this many days and then your character is just dead the end.
Yeah.
So sad, right? Yeah. Right. Like, I'm even fine with Mummy, the curse. Like, again, like if you moved it to a curse and it's like giving you penalties or something, or even if you're dealing with lycanthropy and like every now and then you wake up the next morning covered in blood and wondering what the hell happened. I think that's interesting because the only time pressure is the one you apply to yourself, right? The only time pressure is like, oh, I'm tired of dealing with these penalties. I'm tired of whatever, you know, the social impact of having to walk into a town and wondering if I murdered half the town people last night, right? Whatever it is. Right. It's self-imposed as opposed to just this clock of I have 10 more days before my character drops dead.
This is a really good point. And particularly if they're in the wilderness or something like that, the hand wavy part around that. So in that way, you know, you can go back to maybe the original thing where it just permanently slows down your healing, right? Or some kind of penalty like that. Until you can get it fixed, maybe that's more gainable than the couple days from now you're dead. Yeah, I can see that. Maybe I'm coming back around to the very first original version based on what you just said. That's a good argument. I forget that. I tend to forget that, and then you're totally right. Mid game, they're just not in a place where they can get back in the timer. You know, with like first edition, you have a couple months. I mean, that's probably okay. But yeah, when it's within days, you're right. I've run into that and I forget about it.
I mean, famously, when in my campaign, when my elf character caught lycanthropy and basically had a death timer on him, I kept giving, like, it doesn't really give you any direction as to where to go with that. Like, how do they feel? How is it manifesting? Right. So I tried to keep giving hints of like, you don't feel so well, you have pounding headaches. You look pale, right? Like hints and like, and I can't even remember what, but something that maybe tied it back to that particular fight. So you'd have remembered that, you know, he got beat up and that's bad. He never put it together. He just never put it together.
Yeah.
And he became so frustrated that he decided, I'm just going to go right off into the woods until I'm better. Like clearly something's wrong with me. I'm a burden to you guys. I'm going to go commune with nature until I'm well. Yeah. And he rode off. Yeah. He's like, and I'm just going to go meditate in the woods until it goes away. And I was like,
yeah,
well, it does. You die.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a kind of a bummer moment, right? For the whole campaign there of like, I don't know how else to help this guy of like, no, you're dying. You're dying. This is bad.
Yeah. For me, those are awkward placements. For me, those are really awkward play sessions, and I tend, like, I had, like, a number of scenes like that I've DM'd, like, I kind of regret post hoc.
Yep.
So I do look for ways to avoid that kind of particular vague, I don't know what I'm dealing with, but it's going to terminate you.
Yeah, I would probably, I feel like I want to move the mummy rot into something more curse-like. Yeah, slow healing is rough. Yeah, even, it doesn't even have to be 10%, even just half. Half healing sucks.
Yeah.
People would be real unhappy about that, right? Or whatever number you want to drop to. And then, likewise, with lycanthropy, I would probably just eliminate. I would just be like, whatever, it affects everyone the same. I don't want to deal with this nonsense of elves can't be lycanthropes. Sure they can.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. I hear that.
Dan, in our last little bit of time here, I'm curious, based on what we've said here, if you were going to rerun the Tomb of Rahotep, what would you do to that last encounter?
God. I mean, I'm a little
mummies are classic, about these two. Right? Like,
they're Rahotep. Classic.
You're in the Tomb of Rahotep. Yeah. Like, I feel like there should be mummies.
I do you have suggestions? Because I would be like, it's canonical, it's mummies. Yeah, you're just gonna have to, players, you're just gonna have to show that you have the grit You know, I'll say that while we're talking about that, you know, I've run with my arena analysis program, I've run all the monsters through that. And one of the things I did was I actually computed average number of rounds for the fight based on a, you know, parity level of monsters. And, you know, no surprise, mummies come out at the top of the list. It's probably going to take about 9 rounds for an average mummy fight, which is about double the normal monster fights are like maybe 4 rounds, maybe 5 rounds. Mm-hmm. So mummy fights come out at about double normal. And I might just punish my players. I might just say, yep, they're mummies. And, you know, you're going to have to show me that you have grit to just sit here long enough to chop through them. And that's the game we're playing. Do you have better suggestions?
I think you got to resolve a couple of things, right? You got to resolve the damage question, because it's all over the map, right? What actually causes damage to them, and why, if, you know, in what cases is that fun, right? You really want to do half damage from everything? Are they susceptible to fire, et cetera, et cetera? I still kind of love this idea of just doubling the hit points, just because I feel like that makes it easier for me to mentally balance the encounter. I'm looking at them going, oh, well, they have this many hit points. Of course, it's going to take a long time to whittle them down at the end. And then I would want to modify mummy rot in a way that is immediately penalizing in some way.
There's a lot of reasons why you want to do that.
Not a thing for later. It's a thing for right now, right? You just got hit by a mummy. Something bad happens. Like you got mummy rot. That's going to suck.
I can see a big motivation in that. What would you be your instinct for how you'd change that?
Off the cuff, I think I'd probably just go with the slow healing, right? Just, you know.
Okay. But that doesn't affect the fight, right?
Well, yeah, sure it does. If somebody's rushing to you with a healing potion, right? Or a healing spell. If you play with those things. Right?
Yeah, like, okay.
Bummer. Another way to do it is just straight up minuses, right? Just minuses to hit. You've been cursed by the mummy. You have the mummy's curse. It's, you know, minus one to hit and damage. So you get rid of it. Deal with that.
I can see that. Yeah. I can totally see that.
Maybe it's cumulative. Maybe every time you get cursed, the curse gets worse. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think off the top of my head, though, those are things like, because I feel like the reason that we like grimace about it is mostly the pacing, right? So like you gotta,
right.
And I think the pacing is pretty tied to that problem of the half damage.
Totally. Absolutely.
And I don't mind them taking half damage. Let me just make that clear. I don't mind them taking half damage, but I think like I want to see in the numbers when I'm staring at the encounter so I can go, oh, I should put less mummies here, or, you know, I'm going to reduce their hit points for the sake of this fight or whatever, right? I'm gonna tune this encounter in the way I need to. I think it's lurking hidden if it's just they have 5 hit dice, but oh, by the way, they take half damage from everything.
I hear that. Now, if you keep in mind, if you do that, then no matter what you do, it's going to be slow, but you might just be making it easy and slow instead of like an actual, you know, could go either way fight that's slow. So there's things, you know, like for what it's worth, yesterday I had this, you know, it is one of these fights whereby there's obviously like one magic key that's going to help you, right? And it's fire. And ideally you hit him with a fireball. Now, like, you know, right off the top of my head, like Tumarohotep, you've got sarcophagi on 2 sides of the room. So they crawl out and you've got 5 on 2 sides, and it's not actually possible to hit them all with the same fireball spell among problems.
Yep.
So those kinds of like, you know, key to the puzzle type things, they can be clever. They're great. I just had a fight yesterday in my game that was kind of similar. There were some robots and there was one particular thing that the players could potentially take out to disable all the robots, and they just didn't see it. They just didn't see that was the puzzle, and it turned into a kind of a long, difficult slog of a fight. And if the player character is like, don't have a fireball against mummies, or they don't obviously see that fire is going to be like helpful, you know, that kind of fight turns into a long slog kind of intrinsically. So I'm kind of, yesterday I didn't avoid it. You know, I don't need to avoid it all the time. If, you know, sometimes you have a long slog of a fight is okay. And that's the theme you get from Mummies out of the book.
Yep. I think I do want to lean into that fire thing though. Like, I like that they're susceptible to fire. That seems logical, right? They're dusty. They're wrapped in gauze. They're, you know, like,
right,
highly flammable. Agreed. Reasonable, right? And so probably, yeah, you just need to know before that fight even happens, what does happen if I swing a torch at him, right?
This is good, right? More information is good, right? Yep.
Yeah.
This is good.
Yeah.
Yep. And somehow getting that,
not only does it do damage, I want it to like ignite them, and then they continually take damage because they're burning.
I see that, and you know what? If I go long enough without reading the rules, that's actually my instinct that's probably how mummies work. And then I'm surprised when I see in BX they take half damage, and I'm surprised in original D&D they don't take any extra damage. So that's a reasonable interpretation that, you know, wasn't put in the rules anyplace. So I can say now I'm seeing Steve in the chat right now. It says give one of them a flaming sword. So you could put you could set that up in your dungeon, have some hints about some place where there's a fireball wand, yep, or a flaming sword or something like that. Give the opportunity to get that in advance. Or
we could take William's advice of just sub it out a different monster.
Get rid of
make them wraiths, make them whites, something else.
If I felt that I was time constrained in Tumor or Hotep, that would probably be my first option. Yes, I would make them whites or something. Yeah. Do that.
Yeah, you can even make them particularly tough whites. Whites with a few extra hits, or something, right?
Yeah. Whatever. Like a wraith.
All right, Dan, we are just about out of time here. There you go. Any final thoughts on mummies?
They're like among the classic D&D, and still today, they're among the slowest fights. So if you do care about pacing, like I think Paul and I really do be aware. You know, mummies have great flavor. I think about them in the Egyptian tombs and things like that. It's flavor-wise, I want to grab for them, but do be aware that mummies make for a really, they move slow, they attack slow, they take damage slowly, and the effect later on from the mummy rot is classically a very slow slog in every single way. So do be aware about whether that is the spice that you want to throw into your D&D game this Halloween. Maybe yes, I'll do that sometimes. But maybe you want other undead monsters instead, or tune them how you want.
Yeah, I would make sure that realize that the fact that they've changed so much from edition to edition tells us a couple of things. It tells us that the designers were never quite happy, right? That they were constantly tinkering with it. It's not quite there. And so maybe you're going to need to tinker too. And then it also tells us that your players' expectations aren't going to be solid, because you have a big group of players. They may all have different memories of different versions of the mummy across editions. And so they may question whether or not the mummy is, you know, susceptible to fire. You get a group of seasoned D&D players around the table and you throw trolls at them and they go fire, right? You send mummies at them and they're going, maybe fire.
Maybe it's great. Yeah. Maybe it's not. I don't know. What does the mummy rod do? Sure. But
yeah,
wise words. Super, super wise words on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So take charge. Don't be surprised by the slow slog of a mummy fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about it ahead of time. If you're just rolling on a random monster table for your wandering monsters and you happen to land on mummy and you haven't put any thought into it, maybe roll again.
Nice. That is a good note. A very good note.
Viewers, if you have opinions on the right way to handle mummies, what you think you would like to see mummies, how would you tune them in your game? Leave us a note here in the comment section of the YouTube video. We'd love to hear from you and maybe incorporate that into a future show.
Definitely. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, Loops, GitHub. We have handle wandering DMs on all those sites. So please look for us there and burn down that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those files are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. Also, you can listen to us through various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to the show right now on one of those sites and it gives the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
Very much so. And of course, big thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderinggems. And just like Paul said at the top of the show, we'll be there in about 10 minutes. Every single tier on our Patreon gets you access to our private Discord server where the conversation continues round the clock about old D&D, new D&D, science fiction, horror games, miniatures, all that kind of stuff. Great ideas all the time from our top-notch patrons, and we'll be there in about 10 minutes to continue the conversation with you personally in our live video after chat, one of our favorite parts every week. Now, next week we'll be back. We'll have another special guest, as we've been doing a lot lately. We'll have our friend Keith Amon on, the author of The Monsters Know What They're Doing, and he has a new book out in the last couple of weeks called Making Enemies. So I'm personally really looking forward to talking about Keith Amon about how to make more enemies, because Paul, I need that. I think I need more enemies.
Yeah, I mean, that's as mentioned, custom enemies, custom monsters are one of my favorite things in the game, and so I'm looking forward to talking to Keith all about that.
Definitely one of the top minds in that part in D&D these days. So don't forget, viewers, thank you for being here today, and we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.